11. In the dream he watched, as rain tremor rose from a bed of pink petals. Some still adhered, like small local blushes dispensed upon her pink-brown nakedness. She dressed in her uniform of soft grey, and made her way to the bridge, nodding to and exchanging pleasantries with the others on her shift and those going off watch. She donned the sculpted shell of the induction helmet, and in half an eye blink was floating in space. Here was the vast enfolding darkness, the sheer astringent emptiness of space colossal, writ wide and deep across the entire sensorial realm. An unending presagement of consummate grace and meaningless together. She looked about the void, and far stars and galaxies went swiveling within her field of vision. The view settled on the strange star, the Enigma. At such moments she felt the loneliness, not just of this fathomless wilderness and this near-utter emptiness, but of her own position, and of her whole life. Ship names. She'd heard of a craft called I Blame My Mother, and another called I Blame Your Mother. Perhaps, then, it was a more common complaint than she normally allowed for. And, of course, she'd ended up on this ship, with its own particular chosen name, forever wondering whether it had been one of those little conceits of her superiors to pair them so. Did she blame her mother? She supposed she did. She did not think she could claim any technical deficiency in the love attending her upbringing. And yet, at the time, she'd felt there was. And to this day, she would have claimed that the technicalities of a childhood did not cover all that might be required by certain children. In short, her aunts had never been enough. She knew of many individuals raised by people other than their natural parents, and to a man and to a woman, they all seemed happy and content enough. But it had not been that way for her. She'd long ago accepted that whatever it was she felt was wrong, it was in some sense her fault. Even if it was a fault that derived from causes she could do nothing to alter. Her mother had chosen to remain in contact following the birth of her child, and had left to return to her ship not long after the girl's first birthday. Her aunts had been loving and attentive, and she'd never had the heart or worked up the hurtful malice to let them or anybody else know the aching void she felt inside herself, no matter how many times she'd lain in tears in her bed, rehearsing the words she would use to do just that. She supposed she might have transferred some of her need for a parent to her father, but she'd scarcely felt that he was a part of her life. He was just another man who came to the house, sometimes stayed for a while, played with her, and was kind and even loving. But she'd known instinctively at first, and later admitted rationally to herself after a few years of self-delusion, had played, been kind, and even loved her, in a more cheerily vague and offhand sort of way than many of her uncles. She imagined now that he had loved her in his own fashion, and had enjoyed being with her. And assuredly she'd felt a certain warmth at the time. But still, before very long, even as an infant, before she knew the precise reasons, motives, and desires involved, she'd guessed that the frequency and length of his visits to the house had more to do with his interest in one or two of her aunts than in any abiding tenderness he felt towards his daughter. Her mother returned now and again for visits, that for both of them veered wildly between painful feelings of love and furious rages of resentment. Somehow later, exhausted and dismayed by these sapping, abrasive, attriting episodes, they came to a sort of truce, but it was at the expense of any closeness. By the time her mother returned for good, she was like just another girlfriend. They both had better friends. So she'd always been alone. And she suspected, she almost knew that she would end her days alone. It was a source of sadness, though she tried never to wallow in self-pity, and even in a subsidiary way of shame. For at the back of her mind, she could not escape the nagging desire for somebody, some man, if she was honest with herself, to come to her rescue, to take her away from the vacuum that was her existence, and make her no longer alone. It was something she'd never been able to confess to anybody. And yet somehow that she had an inkling was known to the people and machines who had allowed her to assume this exalted, if onerous, position. She hoped that it was secret within herself, but knew too well the extent of the knowledge base, the sheer experience behind those who exercised power over her and people like her. An individual did not outwit such intelligence. He or she might come to an understanding with it, an accommodation with it, but there was no outthinking or outsmarting it. You had to accept the likelihood that all your secrets would be known to them, and trust that they would not misuse that knowledge, but exploit it without malice. Her fears, her needs, her insecurities, her compensating drives and ambitions, they could be plumbed, measured, and then used. They could be employed. It was a pact, she supposed, and one she didn't really resent, for it was a mutually beneficial arrangement. They and she each got what they wanted. They, a canny, dedicated officer, determined to prove herself in the application of their cause, and she, the chance to seek and gain approval, the reassurance that she was worth something. Such trust, and the multiplying opportunities to provide proof of her diligence and exercised wisdom, ought at least to be enough for her. But still sometimes it wasn't. And she yearned for something that no fusion of herself with any conglomerative could provide. A need to be reassured of her personal worth, an appreciation of her individual value, which would only be valid coming from another individual. She went through cycles of admitting this to herself, and hoping that one day she'd find somebody she could finally feel comfortable with, finally respect, finally judge worthy of her regard, when measured against her own strict standards. And then, rejecting it all, fierce in her determination to prove herself on her terms and the terms of the great service she'd entered, forging the resolve to turn her frustrations to her and their advantage, to redirect the energies resulting from her loneliness into her practical, methodically realizable ambitions. Another qualification, a further course of study, a promotion, commands, further advancement. The enigma attracted her no less than the impossibly old star. Here, in this discovery, might eventually lie a kind of fame that could sate her desire for recognition, or so she told herself sometimes. Here, after all, was already a strange kind of kinship, a sort of twinning, even if it was that of an implausibility and a mystery. She directed her attention to the enigma, seeming to rush towards it in the darkness, swelling its black presence, until it filled her field of vision. A blink of light focused her awareness near its center. Somehow, without much more than that single glimmer, the light had a kind of character to it, something familiar, recognizable. It was like the opening of a door, like gaining an unexpected glimpse into a brightly lit room. Attention drawn, she looked closer automatically, and was instantly sucked into the light. It erupted blindingly, exploding out at her like some absurdly quick solar flare, engulfing her, snapping around her like a trap. Zrain Enhoff Tramo, captain of the General Contact Ship Problem Child, barely had time to react. Then she was plucked away and disappeared into the coruscating depths of the falling fire, struggling and trapped and calling for help, calling to him. He bounced awake on the bed field, eyes suddenly open, breath fast and shallow, heart hammering. The cabin's lights came on, dim at first, and then brightening gently, reacting to his movements. Gnarhoff Owen wiped his face with his hands and looked around the cabin. He swallowed and took a deep breath. He hadn't meant to dream anything like that. It had been as vivid as an implanted dream, or some game scenario shared in sleep. He'd meant to dream one of his usual erotic dreams, not look back 2,000 years to the time when the problem child had first found the trillion-year-old sun and the black body object in orbit around it. All he'd wanted was a sex simulation, not an in-depth inquisition of a bleakly ambitious woman's arid soul. Certainly it had been interesting, and he'd been fascinated that he had somehow been the woman, and yet not been her at the same time, and had been non-sexually inside her, in her mind, close as a neural lace to her thoughts and emotions, and the hopes and fears she'd been prompted to think about by the sight of the star, and the thing she'd thought of as the enigma. But it hadn't been what he'd expected. Another strange, unsettling dream. "Ship," he said. "Yes," the grey area said through the cabin's sound system.
I just had a weird dream.
"Well, I have some experience in that realm, I suppose," the ship said with what sounded like a heavy sigh. "I imagine now you want to talk about it."
"No. Well, no, I just wondered. You weren't... Ah, you want to know, was I interfering with your dreams? Is that it?" "It just, you know, occurred to me.
Well, now, let's see. If I had been, do you think I would answer you truthfully?"
He thought, "Does that mean you were, or you weren't?"
"I was not."
"Are you happy now?"
"No, I'm not happy now. Now, I don't know if you were or you weren't." He shook his head and grinned. "You're fucking with my head either way, aren't you?"
"As if I would do such a thing," the ship said smoothly.
It made a chuckling noise, which contrived to be the most unsettling sound it had articulated so far.
"I expect," it said, "it was just an effect caused by your neural lace bedding in, Gnarhoff Owen. Nothing to worry about. If you don't want to dream at all, gland some absolute."
He said slowly, and then, "lights out." He lay back down in the darkness. "Good night," he said quietly.
"Sweet dreams, Gnarhoff Owen," the grey area said. The circuit clicked ostentatiously off.
He lay awake in the darkness for a while, before falling asleep again.